The moment my lips leave hers, I know she's gone. And for the first time since I met her, I feel her spirit untangle itself from her body.
No.
Lazarus's immortality is not so different than ours. It can be removed. It's been removed. In the distance, famine laughs. A wheezy, wet sound. I can't think of a more inappropriate reaction.
She made another deal behind your back, brother.
My breath catches as I stare down at my Lazarus.
Did you?
But of course she must have. She couldn't remove her immortality herself. And there is only one person who can freely take and give life.
God has forsaken me.
Finally, you understand, as we have all been made to understand. You cannot have both. You must make a choice.
The choice has been taken from me.
It hasn't.
I glance up at him then. I can feel my steady heart pick up at what he's insinuating. My hand shakes as I glance back down at Lazarus. Lazarus, who was never supposed to die.
Lazarus bargained for humanity.
I don't know if the voice in my head is my own or hers. This form muddles my extra senses.
What will you do? It is your decision at the end.
It's not my decision.
I've only ever followed the universe's orders. My gaze passes over famine before touching on the still forms of pestilence and war. My three brothers were willing to do everything to stop me. I'd accepted their decision to fight for humanity. I'd even understood the deep drive that fueled them. They loved their wives and their children, and they all came around to appreciating humanity. Famine and his hardened heart included. I have seen each of my brothers clutch their woman in death. I've heard their bargains. I thought myself above it all. And now here I am, with this woman of flesh and blood, who fought me and fueled me, and who loved me. The woman who I am hopelessly in love with.
Take your woman and run, Thanatos.
I cannot.
I have never once broken the rules. Not in all my long years of existence. I have delivered every single soul to its afterlife, just as I will hers. I have to take her. I'm heaving as I lay her body gently down.
Fool!
I rise and face Lazarus's soul. It is every bit as brilliant as I knew it would be. Clasping her close, I slip us into the world of spirits. And I take my kismet to the afterlife.
Death is the wrong word for this. Death is an ending, but this isn't an ending at all. It feels like a beginning, like rebirth, transmutation. I smile, or at least I feel like I'm smiling, even though I'm not sure I'm solid. I honestly don't know what I am, just that I exist and I am aware. I look around. Wherever I am, muted light surrounds me. I take a step back. My body, or essence, bumps into something solid. I turn, and the first thing I see is that gleaming silver armor, then those large black wings. Finally, my eyes settle on that beloved face that I swear I've always known. Thanatos. I thought I had left him. But of course not. He is death.
You were right. This isn't so bad.
But now I notice how agonized his eyes still are. Rather than answering, Death looks down. I follow his gaze, and the muted light blows away in wisps, as though it were merely thick smoke. Below, I see my lifeless body resting among the wreckage. Finally, the fight is over, and I lost. All of humanity lost. But this isn't so bad. That urge to beg and plead, to leverage and threaten and bargain my way into some compromise is gone. The time for that passed with my life. Death takes my spectral hand and I grip his tightly. As I watch, my body below grows smaller and smaller, as though we're floating away from it.
Where are we going?
Thanatos' grieving eyes burn as they look at me.
Funipa.
Heaven.
The dim light around us brightens, and it's like sun breaking through the clouds. In the distance, figures appear. At least, I think they're figures. To be honest, they're more impressions of people than actual physical bodies. Instead of skin and bones, their forms seem to be made of light. As they come into focus, I begin to recognize them. At the front, there's my mom. Then there's River and Nicolette and Robin and Ethan, Owen and Juniper. I see my nieces and nephews. I even see Harrison, my adoptive father. I've only ever known him through pictures, and yet he's still here, welcoming me. Near the front of the group are two more people who I have no memory of, and yet I inherently know them. My birth parents. I make a small noise. They're all here, all waiting for me. And though it makes no sense, I can feel their love for me.
You're loved.
You're home.
I glance over at Thanatos and his tormented eyes. Death, the ferryman who takes souls and delivers them, but does not join the dead. Death, who belongs neither to Earth nor to the afterlife. He belongs with me. That is the one thing I am certain of. He releases my hand to touch my cheek.
I will dream of you every day, Lazarus.
He looks as though he's burning in his own sort of hell.
Come with me.
I cannot.
Worse, I feel his devastation as though it's my own. He gives me a tight smile and nods to the people waiting for me.
Go to your loved ones. They are waiting for you.
This is where I should feel fear, but the closest I come to it is confusion. This isn't supposed to be how we part, but my essence is being called towards my family, and it's hard to ignore.
I love you, Thanatos, forever and always. Nothing will ever change that. And I'll be waiting for you when even you, the angel of death, meet your own end.
Lazarus' words are nearly my end. I have endured much over my existence, but this moment makes all past traumas pale in comparison.
How am I supposed to let her go?
Despite her words, she lingers in front of me. I stare down at her as, with a spectral finger, Lazarus draws a shape on my armor. To her, it must simply be a mindless doodle, but the shape her finger idly makes, I know that symbol.
Opotu.
Love.
Realization slams into me, so potent that I can barely catch my breath around it. I knew God had given me a word, just as she had my brothers, a word that was both a lesson and a choice wrapped into one. I even knew early on what my word was. Life. I thought I had figured it out and pressed on, but I hadn't understood my task and my challenge, nor had I understood the word, not until now. I was wrong. I misunderstood it all. The word, the choice, the lesson, it was never life. It was love.
Love.
And for whatever reason, that shifts the way in which I see everything. Lazarus frowns, her eyes regretful as she glances up at me.
Until we meet again, Thanatos.
I can feel the sharp edge of her love as she moves away from me. She looks over the gathered crowd once more, her eyes searching. I know who she's looking for. It's the one human she loves above all others, the one she tried to bargain her life for. Ben. The moment Lazarus saved that baby and claimed him as her own was also the moment she truly stopped fighting me. She gave up humanity for that child because she loved him. There's that human selfishness, to pick one human over millions. But is it selfishness? That choice made Lazarus vulnerable to my brother's manipulation, and to my own. All for a little boy she just happened to save. Perhaps you could call that selfishness, but perhaps you could also say that what she had was a love so intense and selfless that eclipsed everything else. My lungs seize up at the thought. That same love made Lazarus desperately bargain her life for her child's. An extraordinary sacrifice, one I didn't accept, but also one I've heard many, many times from humans.
My life for theirs. I would do anything.
And perhaps it was that same love that made Lazarus turn her blade on herself rather than sinking it into my own flesh. My brothers and I have assumed we were better than these humans we were tasked to destroy. But we have been the ones pitting their compassion against them. I've followed orders this entire time. That's what I'm good at. Even Lazarus was fated to me by God. So she too sat comfortably in my world. Until, of course, she didn't. She gave me raw, painful, messy humanity. With all its spontaneity and beauty, she awoke me. And no matter how today ends, I cannot go back to who and what I once was. I see Lazarus hesitate and look back at me. I see plainly in her eyes that she doesn't want to leave me, even though the afterlife and all her loved ones are calling her home. My heart aches so fiercely at the sight of her. I quake at the thought of existing without her.
What will you do? It is your decision in the end.
Those words ring in my ears. They feel like a trick, even though that is not the way the universe works. Cities have crumbled, and legions have died, and I have felt nothing. But the sound of Lazarus's laughter has stirred my heart. The slide of her body under mine has awoken my soul. How many lonely miles have I traveled with the memory of her voice keeping me company? What would my future look like when Lazarus is nothing but a memory once more? The thought is like a physical blow. That future is unfathomable.
You don't even know what loss is. You've never loved anything enough to care if it goes.
Now I know. I cannot lose her. It's not even a question. It's a certainty. I simply can't. It's the same damnable choice Lazarus made when she discovered Ben. A single person can change your life. As a human, you can love deeply enough to doom humanity. Or redeem it.
Wait!
Lazarus's family is already welcoming her. She's frightfully close to that blinding light of the beyond. Have I ever considered heaven frightful before this moment? Because right now it is. And she's a hair's breadth from it.
Wait.
Lazarus turns back to face me. The raw hope in her eyes cuts me deep. Too long that hope has been dashed. It won't be. Ever again. I don't care if I have to apologize every day for the rest of our mortal lives, so long as we get those lives. I move toward the spirits that surround her, brushing past them to get to Lazarus. I clasp her spectral face in my hands. When I look into her eyes, I feel a deep sense of certainty. Not just that I can give up my task, but that I must. Not even God's commands can drown out this drive I feel. I would tear away my immortality, my heavenliness, and I would unmake the world all for the press of this woman's lips against my skin and her voice in my ear.
If I gave you everything you wanted, your son, an end to the apocalypse and the killing, would you return to Earth?
Her brows draw together in confusion, and the sight of it wounds me. I have set her expectations so low she cannot make sense of this.
You can go with your loved ones and enter the afterlife. There will be no more pain. Or you could stay with Ben on Earth. I can't promise that there will be no pain. To live is to feel pain.
She doesn't say anything, and I can't read her face.
What about you?
I want you, Lazarus. With every part of me, I do. That will never change.
My love is just as vast and unending as the rest of me.
But I hurt you, and then I took you, and then I disappointed you.
One of her spectral hands presses against my lips, silencing me.
I have done all the same to you. It is forgiven.
She searches my features.
We have spent the entirety of our relationship fighting for our causes. What if we started fighting for one another?
I go still at the implication.
I want to return to Earth, and I want everything you promised. But I also want one more thing. You. I gasp in a breath and my lungs expand. Rocks are digging into my back and everything feels, well, less than whimsical. I blink my eyes open and stare up at Thanatos, except for that face. That face is pure whimsy. The horseman smiles at me, and that smile manages to drive away all the shadows that linger on his face.
I grin back at him, my entire body feeling alive. But then the smile slips from Death's face. For a moment, he looks confused.
Thanatos?
Just as I begin to sit up, he chokes.
Thanatos? What's going on?
I slip out of his arms so that I can kneel in front of him.
Death?
He looks at me, but his eyes are unfocused. The horseman rises to his feet, and for an instant I think that he's fine. But then he staggers backwards, looking at something in the distance that only he can see. His armor dissolves away completely, and I realize I'm seeing an angel being stripped of his immortality. Death's wings flare wide. He cries out, his body taut with pain. He reaches for his back as the feathers begin to peel off his wings one by one, the inky black plumage tossed about in the wind. The feathers fall away faster and faster. I brace myself for the sight of the flesh beneath them, but there's nothing there. It's as though the appendages themselves are being blown away. I ache at their loss. I know they were cumbersome for him, but I thought they were one of the aspects of the horseman that was beautiful because it was inhuman. All that's left of his immortal attire are his clothes and boots. With effort, he straightens.
Your wings!
I pull myself to my feet.
Watorawa. Transmutation.
Nothing actually goes. It's transformed. But transmutation isn't actually lost or gone at all. I laugh through the tears. I close the distance between us and kiss him savagely. Death chose us. In the end, he chose us. Humanity. And he chose me. Well, technically he chose me, and then I chose him, and then he chose me again, or something like that. But whatever. We chose each other. I can't seem to wrap my mind around it. I stare up at him. Those silver flakes still sparkle like jewels in his eyes, and I can see the barest hint of his glowing glyphs around the collar of his shirt. And when I look down at his hands, he still wears that ring with the coin of the dead.
So it's over?
He nods as he leans in close, his nose brushing against mine.
It is.
I pull away from him and glance around. There are piles of dismembered corpses and twisting plants and broken bits of asphalt. Everything is so quiet. Deathly quiet.
The other horseman.
I turn from Death then and move towards the first horseman my eyes fall on, which just happens to be War. I'm afraid of what I'm going to find when I get to him. The fearsome man lay slumped on his side, a mountain of dead surrounding him. I can't make out much of his face from this angle, but last I saw of him, he'd been stabbed and his body withered. I still see blood on his skin, and his hair is hiding his features, but his sword arm, I swear it's no longer broken. Still, I hesitate for a moment before I crouch in front of him. I move the hair from his face. War's eyes are closed, but he looks better, much better. His olive skin has the same healthy glow I remember.
Wife?
He's alive. Sorry to disappoint. His eyes flutter open. He groans a little as he pushes himself up.
Did he do it?
I glance over my shoulder and meet Death's gaze. He stands where I left him, and without his wings and armor, the horseman looks all the more vulnerable. He did. I give Thanatos another small smile. Humanity has been saved. Once and for all.
That bastard. I knew he had it in him.
Spoken as though we weren't wholly and completely screwed 30 minutes ago. A short distance away, I see Famine just as he flops onto his back and laughs at the sky.
I'm mortal! Oh, fuck, I'm mortal.
Just wait until you age.
Looking forward to it, Grandpa.
One by one, the men pick themselves up. Death hadn't killed them after all. Or perhaps he did. And then he saved them. Or perhaps it wasn't him at all. Perhaps God, the universe, whatever you want to call her, meddled once more. Regardless, it's a wonder, seeing them alive. As soon as they're back on their feet, I tense once more, afraid of the fallout that might come. But if I thought Death's brothers would hate him for what he did, I thought wrong. The men leave their weapons behind before they approach Thanatos. And then, when they do close in on him, they give him thumping hugs.
All is forgiven.
Death holds his brother a bit tighter after he hears that.
You put up a good fight. But in the end, nothing is quite as tenacious as a human woman.
The two men share an amused look. The last one to embrace him is Pestilence.
Welcome to mortality, brother. You're going to love it.
Thanatos does love it. As the four horsemen and I travel up the west coast, steadily making our way to Vancouver Island, Death is forced to learn about the joys of hunger and going to the bathroom, and so many other little humanisms that his immortality shielded him from. And it's a joy. He's a joy. There's a light and excitement in his eyes that I've never seen before. Even when he complains about how barbaric shitting is, or when he grumbles about hunger pains, he really is in love with life. It's as though before he'd forced himself to hold back from enjoying it. Now he doesn't need to. Pestilence, War, Famine, and I have taken to giving him foods like lemons and olives, cheese and yogurt and fish, just to gauge his reaction. Perhaps he tries them out of guilt, or perhaps it's curiosity, but Death goes gamely along with it. And now that he has an appetite, he eats like a horse, as does Famine. Those two get to enjoy the learning curve of mortality together. As for me, my own mortality is less apparent, but I notice it well enough when I cut my hand on accident or scrape my shin. These little nicks would have healed within hours. Now they take days. Despite the high we all have from surviving the apocalypse, we cannot escape its gruesome aftermath. There are so many dead. We pass them for miles and miles, days and days. The smell suffocating, and the flies and scavengers that have descended on them only make the scene more horrific. The dead stretch from Southern California through Oregon, all the way up into Washington. War had been wrong when he said Thanatos was destroying the world a mile per minute. Death had been killing people off far more aggressively. The bodies are a prickly, uncomfortable reminder of what Thanatos did and what the rest of us so narrowly escaped. But then my own perspective is altered. I have glimpsed the afterlife. Death was right. It is nothing to fear. It's not until somewhere in Washington that we see the first living person traveling along the road. The man's eyes look haunted. And when he sees us, his attention lingers on the four brothers a bit too long. The traveler has barely passed us when Pestilence clears his throat.
Unless any of you are interested in more fighting.
I'm always interested in more fighting.
Psycho.
Brother, you say that as though you aren't one.
The two of them laugh then, as though they're sharing the most hilarious joke and not some traumatizing truth.
Let me rephrase. Unless you all wish to cut your hard-won mortality short, I suggest we move off the main road from this point on.
Despite War's enthusiasm for battle, we do move off the road. In the evenings after we've put out our campfires, Death and I drift away from the others. Tonight, like every other night since the almost end of the world, Thanatos holds me, the two of us staring at the stars. Well, I'm staring at the stars. Thanatos is tracing my lips and doing his absolute best to distract me.
I cannot believe it took me so long to see what I should have all along.
I don't hold it against you. You were thinking about death, and I was thinking about life.
Yes, but life and death are lovers, Kismet. They always choose each other in the end.
I turn my face from the stars and meet Death's dark gaze. We did. Just when it seems like we will be doomed to travel forever, we arrive on Vancouver Island. I've had butterflies in my stomach all day. Today I will see my son. The trees around us rustle in the breeze. And this place is one of the most beautiful sights I've laid eyes on in a long time. All of the Pacific Northwest is. And maybe that's because for the first time in over a year, I know I don't have to continue traveling. But I'd also like to believe it's because this place looks like a slice of heaven. Figuratively speaking, of course. I still have so many questions for Thanatos. About the apocalypse's inception, about its outcome, about God's feelings on all of it. You know, those big questions that keep you up at night. But for now, I'll make do with the fact that I stopped Death in the end. Stopped him and then decided to keep him around. Pestilence leads the group of us off of the paved road, and I cast a glance over at the horseman. Pestilence. Victor. I will get it right one of these days. War and famine all have an excited gleam in their eyes. We must be close. My hands begin to tremble, and Death's grip on me tightens. For the next few minutes, the group of us ride in silence. I hear children's laughter before I see the house.
My girls.
War grins like a mad fool. I crane my neck to see anything, but the trees block out my view. But then the trees part, and the late afternoon sun glitters down on green, green grass that slopes away from an enormous two-story home. And out in front of that home stand a group of people, most of them women. They're barbecuing something, and a young man is sitting on the steps, tuning his guitar. Out on the front lawn are a gaggle of children, also mostly girls.
They're back!
Woo! They did it! Pussy power for the win!
One of the women with dark, curly hair comes running towards our group, and Grumpy Famine basically flings himself off his horse like he's the most dramatic thing to ever enter North America. He sprints the last of the distance between them and swings the woman into his arms. I'm taking it all in when I catch sight of Ben. He's tossing a ball in the grass with a young girl who bears an uncanny resemblance to War. Making a small sound, I slide out of Death's arms and off his horse, my eyes trained on my son.
Ben!
My entire body shakes from excitement and happiness and the best sort of nerves. Ben looks up then, catching sight of me. For an instant, I'm paralyzed by a bolt of fear. Does he remember who I am? It's only been 4 months, but to a small child, that's an eternity.
Mommy!
My worries evaporate the moment Ben drops his ball and starts running. Running! When did he get so good at running? But then, of course, he trips and falls because his little legs are still unsteady. And I'm laughing even though my cheeks feel wet. I sprint towards him, cutting the distance between us as he gets back up and, wearing the most blinding smile, begins running at me again. As soon as he's within arm's reach, I sweep him up into a hug, spinning him as I do so. And then I'm kissing his temple.
Mommy! Mommy!
And I'm still crying big, fat, stupid tears. And he's holding me like he's never going to let me go. And I'm 1,000% fine with that. There were countless times when I feared this day would never come. But it has. It has at last. I sit down with my son in the grass, brushing his hair back and trying to memorize his features. A shadow falls over me, and my skin pricks with awareness. Thanatos no longer brings that deadly stillness with him, but he still has a supernatural presence to him. I glance up at the horseman, surprised to see a soft smile on his face, but his eyes are full of uncertainty.
Do I belong here?
I reach out and give his hand a squeeze because he does belong here. Ben pulls away from me and stares up, up, up at the horseman, craning his neck to see the man. He tilts his head to the side, his eyes a little wary. Death squats on his haunches so that he and Ben are roughly eye level. I marvel that the horseman no longer has to lean forward in that position to make room for his wings. My heart thumps in a mad way. I was so sad to see those wings go, but there are so many casually human things Death can now do. Like crouching.
Hello, Ben. I'm Thanatos.
Ben continues to stare unblinkingly at Death, and I think that's going to be the sum total of his reaction. But then Ben reaches out for Death's face. I see the horseman's eyes widen in surprise as Ben points to one of them.
Aye.
Thanatos nods, equally serious. After a moment, he himself reaches out. About an inch from Ben's skin, he hesitates, his fingers curling inward. I remember that, up until several weeks ago, Death's touch killed. Even then, he could control that power, but I still understand his reluctance. It's okay. The horseman draws his fingers down the side of Ben's face, and Ben gazes at the horseman for several long seconds, and then he shyly smiles. Death smiles back, the uncertainty no longer in his eyes.
I can't wait to get to know you.
After a moment, Death wraps his arms around both me and Ben. It's an eerily similar embrace to the one he gave us months and months ago, when Ben's life hung in the balance. Only now, everything is different.
Somewhere in the world. March. Year 28 of the Horsemen. Down a long abandoned road, in a long abandoned neighborhood, in one of the many long abandoned towns of the world, a street lamp flickers. On. Off. On. Off. On. And it stays on.
In the end, it is just as I hoped it would be. A good, long life. Children, grandchildren. All of them are mortal. All are wingless. Some share my blood and some don't. And blessedly, none seem to have inherited my ability to slip a soul from its flesh. Thank goodness. Within a single lifetime, I've created a human legacy I thought would be impossible. There is an inherent magic to life. A magic that not even the afterlife can give. It's why creation exists at all. It's why humans, who balance on the edge of good and evil, are as they are. I still have my secrets. The quiet conversations with the universe. I am still her intermediary, even if I relinquished my powers. I won't ever be fully human. My memories stretch further back than anyone, even my brothers, can remember. I will always be the pause between sentences, the silence that follows the end of a story. I fit between things, and no amount of mortality can erase that. Time here doesn't work as it did before I was made into a man. It's blindingly fast and achingly slow, but eventually it does come to a close. My brothers and their wives go. I don't choose the day. I cannot any longer. That aspect of my power is gone. And one awful day, Lazarus goes too. And none of my knowledge of the afterlife does anything to dull the unbearable agony of her passing. I feel her soul slip away. I see its flight up into the heavens, and this time, though a part of my essence does lead her there, it is not this part of me, the conscious, mortal man I've become. And then she's gone. And somehow, I still live. Though by all rights, the part of me that matters has left. For a handful of years, I exist without her. And I understand finally, truly, Lazarus's words about loss. Then, it comes a day when I feel my own death upon me. And I want to laugh that I have somehow come full circle. I am both death and the dying. My children and grandchildren gather around me, and those of my brother's flesh as well. Ben, who's an old man himself, holds my hand as I draw my final breaths. Between one thought and the next, I slip away. There is no ferryman to lead me on, but it doesn't matter. I know the way. I've memorized it over the eons. There, standing at the threshold of the afterlife, are my brothers, their wives, and Lazarus, my sweet Lazarus. She opens her arms, and I walk into them. And once again, I am home.
The Four Horsemen, Book 4, Death, by Laura Thalassa, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2021, Laura Thalassa, all rights reserved. Recorded by arrangement with the author. Production copyright 2025, Graphic Audio LLC, all rights reserved. Unauthorized download and or duplication is prohibited. Narrated by Vivian LaRue as Lazarus Gaumond. Also performed and narrated by Wyn Delano as Thanatos. Featuring Brandon Marlowe as Famine, Gabriel Michael as Pestilence, and Rainer Gabriel as War. With additional performances by Chris Stinson, Chris Gennebach, James Konacek, Eric Messner, Keith Charles, Aaron Lynn, Michael Glenn, Julian Daly, Mort Shelby, Donald Guzzi, Drew Kopis, Holly Adams, Rob Morera, Emlyn McFarland, Andrew Arceus, Miroslav Shearer, Jewel Harrison, Lorelei Froiler, Oliver Jackson, Jameson Hunt, Jonathan Church, Fabiola Da Silva, Jerry J. Marshall, Zoleka Wundla, Richard Rowan,
Kimberly Gilbert, David M. Jordan, Dylan Lynch, Jessica Threet, Felicity Cross, and Jessica Schley. Adapted for graphic audio and directed by Elliot Dalton. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Marissa Schwabe. Original theme music for the Four Horsemen series by Vanessa Thurlow. Original music by Maddie Frank. Produced by Colleen Delaney, Scott McCormick, David Zitney, Casey Green, and Aaron Coe. Executive producers Angie Cornett, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. If you enjoyed the Four Horsemen series, why not try the Darkness series by Stacey Marie Brown? Keep listening for a preview of the Darkness series, Book 1, Darkness of Light, and more booming than Death's voice at a rodeo, graphic audio.
Ember, open your eyes.
A sultry voice floated into my head and stirred me from a deep sleep. My eyes blinked open, and when I rolled over onto my side, a beautiful forest lay before me. Every leaf glistened in the sunlight, and fresh dew clung to the leaves. It was breathtaking, and I felt so warm and happy here. There was an instant emotional connection to it.
Ember, Nehushla, get up.
Pushing myself up, I turned to see Torin standing in the distance. My heart fluttered. He pivoted and walked into the forest. I knew he wanted me to follow. But no matter how quickly I ran, Torin never let me catch up. A cool breeze stirred the leaves around me, sending chills over my skin as I delved deeper into the shadows. The branches curled and twisted into bony fingers. Heavy shadows hung over me, incarcerating me within their gloom. Panic consumed me when I realized Torin had disappeared. I picked up my pace, distressed I had lost him. I pushed through some brush into a clearing and halted. Bodies were lumped in piles across the burned meadow. Ash and smoke hung heavy in the air. Blood soaked into the grass, dyeing it a rich shade of burgundy. The sight of carnage and the smell of charred flesh bore down on me, making me wretch. A stabbing pain sank into my heart. I was certain, without knowing why, I was responsible for the destruction in front of me.
Ember.
I did this. I fixed my gaze straight ahead as I spoke. Didn't I? He looked down on me, his eyes full of sadness.
Yes. You are capable of much worse. When the time comes, you must try to break free, Ember. Your life, and everyone else's, depends on it.
What do you mean? Turning his body, he pressed closer to me.
Things are about to change.
He tucked a strand of hair behind my ear.
I'm going to do everything I can to protect you. There is so much I wish I could tell you. Just know, there is a spy and a traitor around you.
A spy? Who? Instead of answering. Eventually, he pulled back.
I'm trying to show you. Don't trust them. Nothing and nobody are what they seem. Including you, my dear Ember.
He turned away, fading into the trees.
Torin, wait! Don't leave me!
His form shimmered and completely disappeared.
Thanks for listening to this graphic audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,700 titles to choose from. Listen to over 225 binge-worthy series. We feature titles in genres like science fiction, fantasy, romanticy, westerns, mystery thrillers, comics, and more. Check out our exclusive series such as Deathlands, Rogue Angel, Outlanders, Tangent Knights, and Agent of Exiles, which are only available in our dramatized adaptation format. Experience a radically different type of audiobook, produced with a full cast, sound effects, and cinematic music. Listen to a movie in your mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. Our dramatized adaptation titles are available at all major audiobook retailers and platforms. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and other social platforms. For more information and samples of all our titles, visit our website at graphicaudio.net.